I glanced at the engraved name tag placed discreetly on the pocket of his well-pressed uniform shirt. "Thank you, Stefan." I rooted around in my bag for cash to tip him, but realized that I'd never thought to change my American dollars into euros and hadn't yet stopped at an ATM. "Oh, I'm sorry, I only have American dollars, is that okay?" His face flushed crimson and he began apologizing profusely.
"Oh, no, miss, please do not worry about such things. Miss Priestley takes care of these details when she departs. However, since you will be needing local currency when you leave the hotel, allow me to show you this."
He walked over to the behemoth of a desk, slid open the top drawer, and handed me an envelope with French Runway's logo on it. Inside was a pile of euro bills, about 4,000 American dollars worth in all. The note, scribbled by Brigitte Jardin, the editor-in-chief who'd borne the brunt of planning and scheduling for both this trip and Miranda's upcoming party, read,
"Andrea darling, delighted to have you join us. Please find enclosed euros for your use while in Paris. I've spoken with Monsieur Renaud, and he will be on call for Miranda 24 hours a day. See below for a listing of his work and personnel numbers, as well as the numbers of the hotel chef, physical fitness trainer, director of transportation, and of course, the general manager. They are all familiar with Miranda's stays during the shows, and so there should be no problems. Of course, I may always be reached at work or, if necessary, by cell, home phone, fax, or pager, if either of you requires anything at all. If I don't see you before Saturday's big soiree, I look forward to meeting you there. Lots of love, Brigitte."
Folded on a sheet of Runway stationery and tucked underneath the cash was a list of nearly 100 phone numbers encompassing everything one could need in Paris, from a chic florist to an emergency surgeon. These numbers were repeated on the last page of the detailed itinerary I'd created for Miranda, using information Brigitte had updated daily and faxed over. So as of this moment, there didn't appear to be a single contingency, short of an all-out world war, that would prevent Miranda Priestley from viewing the spring line with the least possible amount of stress, anxiety, and concern.
"Thank you so much, Stefan. This is most helpful."
I peeled off a few bills for him anyway, but he courteously pretended not to see it and ducked back into the hallway. I was pleased to see that he appeared significantly less terrorized than he had just a few moments earlier. I somehow managed to find the people she had asked for and figured I had a few minutes to rest my head on the 400-thread-count pillowcase. But the phone rang the moment I closed my eyes.
"Andrea, come to my room immediately," she barked before slamming down the phone.
"Yes, of course, Miranda. Thank you for asking so nicely. It'd be my pleasure," I said to absolutely nobody. I heaved my jet-lagged body off the bed and concentrated on not getting a heel stuck in the carpeted hallway that connected my room to hers. Once again, a maid answered the door when I knocked.
"Andrea, one of Brigitte's assistants just rang me to see how long my speech is for today's brunch," she announced.
She was paging through a copy of Women's Wear Daily that someone from the office, probably Allison, who knew the drill from her tenure in Miranda's office, had faxed earlier, and two beautiful men were working on her hair and makeup. A cheese plate sat on the antique table beside her. Speech? What speech? The only thing besides shows that was on the itinerary today was some sort of awards luncheon that Miranda planned to spend her usual 15 minutes at before bolting out of sheer boredom.
"I'm sorry, did you say a speech?"
"I did." She carefully closed the paper, calmly folded it in half, and then tossed it angrily to the floor, narrowly missing one of the men who knelt in front of her.
"Why the hell was I not informed that I'd be receiving some nonsense award at today's luncheon?" she hissed, her face contorting with a hatred I'd never seen before. Displeasure? Sure. Dissatisfaction? All the time. Annoyance, frustration, generalized unhappiness? Of course, every minute of every day. But I'd never seen her look so downright pissed off.
Miranda, I'm so sorry, but it was actually Brigitte's office that RSVP'd you to the event today, and they never...
Stop speaking. Stop speaking this instant. All you ever offer me are excuses. You are my assistant. You are the person I designated to work things out in Paris. You are the one who should be keeping me abreast of these things.
She was nearly shouting now.
One of the makeup guys asked softly in English if we would like a moment alone, but Miranda ignored him entirely. It's noon right now, and I'll be needing to leave here in 45 minutes. I expect a short, succinct, and articulate speech, legibly typed and waiting in my room. If you cannot accomplish this, see yourself home. Permanently. That's all. I fled down the hallway faster than I'd ever run in heels and whipped open my international cell phone before I'd made it into my room. It was nearly impossible to dial Brigitte's work number since my hands were shaking so badly, but somehow the call went through. One of her assistants answered. I need Brigitte, I shrieked, my voice breaking when I pronounced her name. Where is she? Where is she? I need to talk to her now! The girl was momentarily shocked into silence. Angie, is that you? Yes, it is me, and I need Brigitte. It's an emergency. Where the hell is she? She's at the show, but don't worry. She always has her cell phone on. Are you at the hotel? I'll have her call you right back. The phone on the desk rang a mere few seconds later, but it felt like a week. Andrea, she lilted in her lovely French accent. What is it, dear? Monique said you are hysterical. Hysterical? Damn right I'm hysterical. Brigitte, how could you do this to me? Your office made the arrangements for this fucking luncheon, and no one bothered to tell me that she is not only receiving an award, but also expected to give a speech? Andrea, calm down. I'm sure we told... And I have to write it. Are you listening to me? I have 45 fucking minutes to write an acceptance speech for an award I know nothing about in a language I don't speak. Or I'm finished. What am I going to do? All right, relax. I'm going to walk you through this. First of all, the ceremony is right there, at the Ritz, in one of the salons. The what? Which salon? I hadn't had a chance to look around the hotel yet, but I was reasonably sure there weren't any pubs in the place. It is French for, oh, what do you call them, meeting rooms. So she will only need to go downstairs. It is for the French Council on Fashion, an organization here in Paris that always has its awards during the shows, because everyone is in town. Runway will be receiving an award for fashion coverage. It is not such a, how do you say, big deal, almost like a formality. Great, well, at least I know what it's for. What exactly am I supposed to write? Why don't you just dictate in English and I can get Monsieur Renault to translate it, okay? You start. I'm ready. My voice had regained some confidence, but I could still barely grip the pen. The combination of exhaustion, stress, and hunger was making it hard to focus my eyes on the Ritz stationery that was laid out on my desk. Andrea, you are in luck again. Oh, really? Because I'm not feeling so lucky right now, Brigitte. These things are always conducted in English. There is no need for translation. So you can write it, yes? Yes, yes, I'll write it, I mumbled and dropped the phone. There wasn't even time to consider that this was my very first chance to show Miranda that I was capable of doing something more sophisticated than fetching lattes. After I hung up and began typing away at 60 words a minute, typing was the only useful class I'd taken in all of high school, I realized the whole thing would only take 2, maybe 3 minutes for Miranda to read. There was just enough time to gulp some of the Pellegrino and devour a few of the strawberries someone had thoughtfully left on my small bar. If only they could have left a cheeseburger, I thought. I remembered that I had tucked a Twix bar in my luggage that had been neatly piled in the corner, but there wasn't time to look for it. Exactly 40 minutes had passed since I'd received my marching orders. It was time to see if I'd passed. A different, but equally as terrified, maid answered Miranda's door and ushered me into the living room. Obviously, I should have remained standing, but the leather pants I'd been wearing since the day before felt like they were permanently stuck to my legs, and the strappy sandals that hadn't bothered me so much on the plane were beginning to feel like long, flexible razor blades affixed to my heels and toes. I chose to perch on the overstuffed couch, but the moment my knees bent and my butt made contact with the cushion, her bedroom door flew open and I instinctively launched to my feet. "Where's my speech?" she asked automatically, while yet another maid followed after her, holding a single earring that Miranda had forgotten to put in. "You did write something, did you not?" She was wearing one of her classic Chanel suits, round collars with fur trim, and a looping strand of extraordinarily large pearls. "Of course, Miranda," I said proudly. I think this will be appropriate. I walked toward her, since she was making no effort to retrieve it herself, but before I could offer her the paper, she snatched it from my hand. I didn't realize until her eyes had finished moving back and forth that I'd been holding my breath.
Fine, this is fine. Certainly nothing groundbreaking, but fine. Let's go.
She picked up a matching quilted Chanel purse and placed the chain handle over her shoulder.
Pardon?
I said let's go.
This silly little ceremony starts in 15 minutes, and with any luck we'll be out of there in 20. I truly loathe these things.
There was no way to deny that I'd heard her say both let's and we. I was definitely expected to go with her. I glanced down at my leather pants and fitted blazer and figured that if she had no problem with it, and I certainly would have heard if she had, then what did it really matter? There would probably be fleets of assistants roaming around tending to their bosses, and surely no one would care what we were wearing. The salon was exactly what Brigitte had said it would be. A typical hotel meeting room, complete with a couple dozen round luncheon tables and a slightly raised presentation stage with a podium. I stood along the back wall with a few other employees of various kinds and watched as the president of the council showed an incredibly unfunny, uninteresting, wholly uninspired movie clip on how fashion affects all of our lives. A few more people hogged the mic for the next half hour, and then, before a single award had been presented, an army of waiters began bringing out salads and filling wine glasses. I looked warily at Miranda, who appeared acutely bored and irritated, and tried to shrink smaller behind the potted tree I was currently leaning against to keep from falling asleep. I can't be sure how long my eyes were closed, but just as I lost all control of my neck muscles and my head started to nod forward uncontrollably, I heard her voice.
"Andrea, I don't have time for this nonsense," she whispered loudly enough that a few clackers from a nearby table glanced up. "I wasn't told that I would be receiving an award, and I wasn't prepared to do so. I'm leaving."
And she turned around and began striding toward the door. I hobbled after her but thought better of grabbing her shoulder.
"Miranda? Miranda?"
She was clearly ignoring me.
"Miranda, whom would you like to accept the award on behalf of Runway?"
I whispered as quietly as I could and still have her hear me. She whipped around and stared me straight in the eyes.
"Do you think I care? Go up there and accept it yourself."
And before I could say another word, she was gone. Oh my God. This wasn't happening. I would surely wake up in my own unglamorous, negative thread count sheeted bed in just a minute and discover that this entire day, hell, the entire year, had just been a particularly horrid dream. That woman didn't really expect me, the junior assistant, to go up there and accept an award for Runway's fashion coverage, did she? I looked around the room frantically to see if anyone else from Runway was attending the lunch. No such luck. I slumped down in a seat and tried to figure out whether I should call Emily or Brigitte for advice, or whether I should just leave myself, since Miranda apparently cared nothing about receiving this honor. My cell phone had just connected to Brigitte's office, who I was hoping could make it over there in time to take the goddamn award herself, when I heard the words, "Extend our deepest appreciation to American Runway for its accurate, amusing, and always informative fashion coverage. Please welcome its world-famous editor-in-chief, a loving fashion icon herself, Ms. Miranda Priestley." The room erupted into applause at precisely the same moment I felt my heart stop beating. There was no time to think, to curse Brigitte for letting this all happen, to curse Miranda for leaving and taking the speech with her, to curse myself for ever accepting this hateful job in the first place. My legs moved forward on their own, left, right, and climbed the three steps to the podium with no incident whatsoever. Had I not been utterly shell-shocked, I might have noticed that the enthusiastic clapping had given way to an eerie silence as everyone tried to figure out who I was. But I didn't. Instead, some greater force prompted me to smile, reach out to take the plaque from the severe-looking president's hands, and place it shakingly on the podium in front of me. It wasn't until I lifted my head and saw hundreds of eyes staring back, curious,
probing, confused eyes, all of them, that I knew for sure I would cease breathing and die right there. I imagine I stood like that for no longer than 10 or 15 seconds, but the silence was so overwhelming, so all-consuming, that I wondered if I had, in fact, died already. No one uttered a word. No silver scraped plates. No glasses clinked. No one even whispered to a neighbor about who was standing in for Miranda Priestley. They just watched me, moment after moment, until I was left with no choice but to speak. I didn't remember a word of the speech that I had written an hour earlier, so I was on my own. "Hello?" I began, and heard my voice reverberate in my ears. I couldn't tell if it was the microphone or the sound of blood pounding inside my head, but it didn't matter. The only thing I could hear for sure was that it was shaking, uncontrollably. "My name is Andrea Sachs, and I'm on staff at Runway. Unfortunately, Miranda, Ms. Priestley, had to step out for a moment, but I would like to accept this award on her behalf, and, of course, on behalf of everyone at Runway. Thank you, I couldn't remember the name of the council or the president here. All so much for this wonderful honor. I know I speak for everyone when I say that we are all so honored." Idiot! I was stuttering and umming and shaking, and I was even conscious enough at this point to notice that the crowd had begun to twitter. Without another word, I walked in as dignified a manner as I could manage from the podium, and didn't realize until I'd reached the back doors that I'd forgotten the plaque. A staffer followed me to the lobby where I just collapsed in a fit of exhaustion and humiliation and handed it to me. I waited until she left and asked one of the janitors to throw it out. He shrugged and tossed it in his bag. "That bitch," I thought, too angry and tired to conjure up any really creative names or methods of ending her life. My phone rang, and knowing it was her, I turned off the ringer and ordered a gin and tonic from one of the front desk people. "Please, please, just have someone send it out, please." The woman took one look at me and nodded. I sucked the entire thing down in just two long gulps and headed back upstairs to see what she wanted. It was only 2 in the afternoon on my first day in Paris, and I wanted to die. Only death was not an option. Chapter 17. "Miranda Priestley's room," I answered from my new Parisian office. My 4 glorious hours that were supposed to constitute a full night's sleep had been rudely interrupted by a frantic call from one of Karl Lagerfeld's assistants at 6 a.m., which is precisely when I'd discovered that all of Miranda's phone calls were being routed directly to my room for answering. It appeared the entire city and surrounding area knew Miranda stayed here during the shows, and so my phone had been ringing incessantly since the moment I stepped inside. Never mind the 2 dozen messages that had already been left on the voicemail. "Hi, it's me. How's Miranda doing? Is everything okay? Did anything go wrong yet? Where is she and why aren't you with her?" "Hey, Em. Thanks for caring. How are you feeling, by the way?" "What? Oh, I'm fine. A little weak, but getting better. Whatever. How is she?" "Yes, well, I'm fine too. Thanks for asking. Yes, it was a long flight to get here, and I haven't slept for more than 20 minutes at a time since the phone keeps ringing, and I'm pretty sure it's never going to stop. And oh, I gave a completely impromptu speech after writing an impromptu speech to a group of people who wanted Miranda's company but apparently weren't interesting enough to warrant it. Looked like a giant fucking idiot, actually, and nearly gave myself a heart attack in the process. But hey, other than that, things are just great." "Andrea, be serious. I've been really worried about everything. There wasn't a lot of time to prepare for this, and you know that if anything goes wrong over there, she's going to blame me anyway."
"Emily, please don't take this personally, but I can't talk to you right now. I just can't do it."
"Why? Is something wrong? How did her meeting go yesterday? Did she get there on time? Do you have everything you need? Are you making sure to wear appropriate clothes? Remember, you're representing Runway over there, so you always have to look the part.
Emily, I need to hang up now.
Andrea, I'm concerned. Tell me what you've been doing.
Well, let's see. In all the free time I've had, I've gotten a half dozen or so massages, 2 facials, and a few manicures. Miranda and I have really bonded over doing the whole spa thing together. It's great fun. She's really trying hard not to be too demanding, says she really wants me to enjoy Paris. It's such a wonderful city, and I'm lucky to be here. So basically, we're just hanging out and having fun, drink great wine, shop, you know, the usual.
Andrea, this is really not funny, okay? Now tell me what the hell is going on.
With every degree more annoyed she sounded, my mood improved a notch.
Emily, I'm not sure what to tell you. What do you want to hear? How it's been so far?
Let's see. I've spent most of my time trying to figure out how best to sleep through a phone that won't stop ringing, while simultaneously shoving enough food down my throat between the hours of 2 and 6 a.m. to sustain me for the remaining 20 hours. It's like fucking Ramadan here, Em. No eating during daylight hours. Yeah, you should be really sorry you're missing this one.
The other line began blinking and I put Emily on hold. Every time it rang, my mind went quickly, uncontrollably to Alex, wondering if he just might call and say that everything was going to be just fine. I'd called twice on my international cell since I'd arrived, and he'd answered both times, but like the expert prank caller I'd been in junior high, I'd hung up the moment I'd heard his voice. It had been the longest we'd ever gone without talking, and I wanted to hear what was going on, but I also couldn't help feeling like life had gotten significantly simpler since we'd taken a break from the bickering and the guilt-mongering. Still, I held my breath until I heard Miranda's voice screeching from across the wires.
Andrea, when is Lucia due to arrive?
Oh, hello, Miranda. Let me just check the itinerary I have for her. Here it is. Let's see. It says here that she was flying in directly from the shoot in Stockholm today. She should be at the hotel.
Connect me.
Yes, Miranda. Just a moment, please. I put her on hold and switched back to Emily.
That's her. Hold on.
Miranda, I just found Lucia's number. I'll connect you now.
Wait, Andrea.
I'll be leaving the hotel in 20 minutes for the rest of the day. I'll need some scarves before I return and a new chef. He should have a minimum of 10 years' experience in mostly French restaurants and be available for family dinners 4 nights a week and dinner parties twice a month. Now connect me to Lucia. I knew I shouldn't have gotten hung up on the fact that Miranda wanted me to hire her a New York chef from Paris, but all I could focus on was that she was leaving the hotel, without me, and for the entire day. I clicked back to Emily and told her that Miranda needed a new chef.
I'll work on it, Andy, she announced while coughing. I'll do some preliminary screening, and then you can talk to a few of the finalists. Just find out if Miranda would like to wait until she gets home to meet them, or if she'd prefer if you arranged for a couple to fly there and meet her now, okay?
You can't be serious.
Well, of course I'm serious. Miranda hired Kara when she was in Marbella last year. Their last nanny had just quit, and she had me fly 3 finalists to her so she could find someone right away. Just find out, okay?
Sure, I muttered, and thanks. Just talking about those massages, it sounded so good, I decided to book one for myself. There wasn't an appointment available until early evening, so I called room service in the meantime and ordered a full breakfast. When the butler delivered it to me, I'd already crawled back into one of the plush robes, donned a pair of the matching slippers, and prepared myself to feast on the omelette, croissants, Danish, muffins, potatoes, cereal, and crepe that arrived smelling so good. After devouring all the food and 2 cups of tea, I waddled back to the bed I hadn't really slept in the night before and fell asleep so quickly that I wondered if someone had slipped something in my orange juice. The massage was the perfect way to top off what had been a blessedly relaxed day. Everyone else was doing my work for me, and Miranda had only called and woken me once. Once! To request that I make her a lunch reservation the following day. This isn't so bad, I thought, as the woman's strong hands kneaded my twisted neck muscles. Not a bad perk at all.
But just as I started to drift off once again, the cell phone that I'd grudgingly brought along began its persistent ring. "Hello," I said brightly, as if I weren't lying naked on a table covered in oil half asleep. "Andrea, move my hair and makeup earlier and tell the Ungaro people I can't make it tonight. I'll be attending a small cocktail party instead, and I expect you to come with me. Be ready to leave in an hour."
Sure,
I stammered, trying to process the fact that I was actually going somewhere with her. A flashback from yesterday, the last time I was told at the very last minute that I was to go somewhere with her, flooded my brain, and I felt as though I would hyperventilate. I thanked the woman and charged the massage to the room, even though I'd made it through only the first 10 minutes, and I ran upstairs to figure out how to best maneuver around this newest obstacle. This was getting old. Quickly. It took just a few minutes to page Miranda's hair and makeup people, who, incidentally, were different from my own. I was pieced together by an angry-looking woman whose look of despair on seeing me for the first time haunted me still, while Miranda had a pair of gay guys who looked like they stepped directly out of the pages of Maxim, and change her appointment.
"No problem," Julien squealed in a thick French accent. "We will be there, as you say, wearing bells. We clear our schedules this week just in the case that Madame Priestley needs us at different times."
I paged Brigitte yet again and asked her to deal with the Ungaro people. Time to hit the wardrobe. The sketchbook with all my different looks was displayed prominently on the bedside table, just waiting for a lost fashion victim like myself to turn to it for spiritual guidance. I flipped through the headings and subheadings and tried to make sense of it all. Shows: 1. Daytime. 2. Evening. Meals: 1. Breakfast meeting. 2. Lunch. A. Casual, hotel or bistro. B. Formal, the Espadon in the Ritz. 3. Dinner. A. Casual, bistro, room service. B. Mid-range, decent restaurant, casual dinner party. C. Formal, Le Grand Vifor restaurant, formal dinner party. Parties: 1. Casual, champagne breakfasts, afternoon teas. 2. Stylish, cocktail parties by non-major people, book parties, meet for drinks. 3. Dressy, cocktail parties by major people, anything at a museum or gallery, post-show parties hosted by design team. Miscellaneous: 1. To and from the airport. 2. Athletic events, lessons, tournaments, etc. 3. Shopping excursions. 4. Running errands. A. To couture salons. B. To upscale shops and boutiques. C. To the local food store and or health and beauty aid. There didn't appear to be any suggestions for what to wear when one was unable to establish the majorness or non-majorness of the hosts. Clearly, there was the opportunity to make a big mistake here. I could narrow the event down to parties, which was a good first step, but at that point, things got gray. Was this party going to be a simple number 2, where I just pull out something chic, or was it really a 3? In which case I'd better pay attention to choose something from the more elegant choices. There were no instructions for gray area or uncertainty, but someone had helpfully included a last-minute handwritten note toward the bottom of the table of contents. "When in doubt, and you never should be, better to be underdressed in something fabulous than overdressed in something fabulous." Well, okay then. It looked like I now squarely fit into category party, subcategory stylish. I turned to the 6 looks that Lucia had sketched for that specific description and tried to figure out what might look less ridiculous once it was actually on. After a particularly embarrassing run-in with a feather-covered tank top and patent leather thigh-high, as in, yes, over-the-knee, boots, I finally selected the outfit on page 33, a flowy patchwork skirt by Roberto Cavalli and a baby tee and a pair of biker chick black boots by D&G. Hot, sexy, stylish, but not too dressy, without actually making me look like an ostrich, an 80s throwback, or a hooker.
What more could you ask for?
Just as I was attempting to choose a workable bag, the hair and makeup woman showed up to begin her frowning and disapproving attempts at making me not look half as horrific as she clearly thought I did. Could you maybe lighten the stuff under my eyes just a little? I asked carefully, desperately trying not to disparage her handiwork. It probably would have been better to have a go at the makeup myself, especially since I had more supplies and instructions than the NASA scientists commissioned to build the space shuttle. But the makeup Gestapo showed up like clockwork whether I liked it or not.
No,
she barked, clearly not striving for the same sensitivity as myself.
It looks better this way.
She finished painting on the thick black paint along my bottom lashes and vanished as quickly as she'd arrived. I grabbed my bag, alligator Gucci bowling bag, and headed to the lobby 15 minutes before our estimated time of departure so I could double-check that the driver was ready. Just as I was debating with Renault whether Miranda would prefer us to each take separate cars so she wouldn't have to speak to me or actually use the same one and risk catching something from sharing a back seat with her assistant, she appeared. She looked me up and down, very slowly, her expression remaining completely passive and indifferent. I'd passed. This was the first time since I'd started working there that I hadn't received a look of all-out disgust, or at the very least a snarky comment, and all it had taken was a SWAT team of New York fashion editors, a collection of Parisian hair and makeup stylists, and a hefty selection of the world's finest and most expensive clothing.
Is the car here, Andrea?
She looked stunning in a short, shirred velvet cocktail dress.
Yes, Miss Priestley, right this way,
Monsieur Renault interrupted smoothly, leading us past a group of what could only be other American fashion editors, also there for the shows. A deferential hush fell over the super-hip-looking crowd of uber-clackers when we walked past, Miranda 2 steps in front of me, looking thin and striking and very, very unhappy. I nearly had to run to keep up, even though she was 6 inches shorter than me, and waited until she gave me a, "Well, what the hell are you waiting for?" look before I ducked into the back seat of the limo after her. Thankfully, the driver appeared to know where he was going, because I'd been paranoid for the past hour that she would turn to me and ask me where the unknown cocktail party was being held. She did turn to me, but she said nothing, choosing instead to chat with B-Dad on her cell phone, repeating over and over that she expected him to arrive with plenty of time to change and have a drink before the big party on Saturday night. He was flying over in his company's private jet, and they were currently debating whether or not to bring Carolyn and Cassidy. Since he wouldn't be returning until Monday, she didn't want the girls to have to miss a day of school. It wasn't until we'd actually pulled up in front of a duplex apartment on Boulevard Saint-Germain that I wondered what it was exactly that I was supposed to do all night. She'd always been rather good about not abusing Emily or me or any of her staff in public, which indicated, at least on some level, that she knew she was doing it in the first place. So if she couldn't really order me to fetch her drinks or find her someone on the phone or have something dry cleaned while we were standing there, what was I to do?
Andrea, this party is being hosted by a couple with whom I was friendly when we lived in Paris. They requested that I bring along an assistant to entertain their son, who generally finds these events rather dull. I'm sure the two of you will get along well.
She waited until the driver opened her door. Then she daintily stepped out in her perfect Jimmy Choo pumps. Before I could open my own door, she had climbed the 3 steps and was already handing her coat to the butler, who was clearly awaiting her arrival. I slumped back into the soft leather seat for just a minute, trying to process this new gem of information she'd so coolly relayed. The hair, the makeup, the rescheduling, the panicked consultation with the style book, the biker chick boots, were all so I could spend the night babysitting some rich couple snot-nosed kid, and a French snot-nosed kid no less. I spent 3 full minutes reminding myself that The New Yorker was now only a couple months away,
that my year of servitude was about to pay off, that I could surely make it through one more night of tedium to get my dream job. It didn't help. All of a sudden, I desperately wanted to curl up on my parents' couch and have my mom microwave me some tea while my dad set up the Scrabble board. Jill and even Kyle would be visiting too, with baby Isaac, who would coo and smile when he saw me, and Alex would call and tell me he loved me. No one would care that my sweatpants were stained or my toes were frightfully unpedicured, or that I was eating a big, fat chocolate eclair. Not a single person would even know that there were fashion shows going on somewhere across the Atlantic, and they sure as hell wouldn't be interested in hearing about them. But all of that seemed incredibly far away. A lifetime, actually. And right now, I had to contend with a coterie of people who lived and died on the runway. That, and what was sure to be a screaming, spoiled little boy speaking some French gibberish. When I finally pulled my scantily but stylishly clad self from the limo, the butler was no longer expecting anyone. There was music coming from a live band, and the smell of scented candles wafted outside from a window above the small garden. I took a deep breath and reached up to knock, but the door swung open. It's safe to say that never, ever in my young life had I been more surprised than I was that night. Christian was smiling back at me.
"Andy, darling, so glad you could make it," he said, leaning in and kissing me full on the mouth.
A bit intimate considering my mouth had been hanging wide open in disbelief.
"What are you doing here?"
He grinned and pushed that ever-present curl off his forehead.
"Shouldn't I be asking you the same thing because you seem to follow me everywhere I go? I'm gonna have to assume you want to sleep with me."
I blushed and, always the lady, snorted loudly.
"Yeah, something like that. Actually, I'm not here as a guest. I'm just a very well-dressed babysitter. Miranda asked me to come along and didn't tell me until the last second that I'm supposed to be watching the host's bratty son tonight. So if you'll excuse me, I better go make sure he has all the milk and crayons he'll need."
"Oh, he's just fine. And I'm pretty sure the only thing he'll be needing tonight is another kiss from his babysitter."
And he cupped my face in his hands and kissed me again. I opened my mouth to protest, to ask him what the hell was going on, but he took that as enthusiasm and slid his tongue into my mouth.
"Christian,"
I was hissing quietly, wondering just how quickly Miranda would fire me if she caught me making out with some random guy at one of her own parties.
"What the hell are you doing? Let go of me."
I squirmed away, but he just continued to grin that annoyingly adorable smile.
"Andy, since you seem to be a little slow on the uptake here, this is my house. My parents are hosting this party, and I was clever enough to have them ask your boss to bring you along. Did she tell you that I was 10 years old, or did you just decide that for yourself?"
"You're joking. Tell me you're joking, please."
"Nope. Fun, right? Since I can't seem to pin you down any other way, I thought this might work. My stepmother and Miranda used to be friendly when Miranda worked at French Runway. She's a photographer and does shoots for them all the time. So I just had her tell Miranda that her lonely son wouldn't mind a little company in the form of one attractive assistant. Worked like a charm. Come on, let's get you a drink."
He put his hand on the small of my back and led me toward a massive oak bar in the living room, which currently had 3 uniformed bartenders administering martinis and glasses of scotch and elegant flutes of champagne.
"So, let me get this straight. I don't have to babysit for anyone tonight? You don't have a baby brother or anything like that, do you?"
It was incomprehensible that I had driven to a party with Miranda Priestley and had no responsibilities for the entire night except to hang out with a hot, smart writer. Maybe they'd invited me because they were planning to make me dance or sing or entertain the guests. Or perhaps they were really short one cocktail waitress and figured I was the easiest last-minute fill-in. Or maybe we were headed to the coat check, where I could relieve the girl who sat there now, looking bored and tired. My mind refused to wrap itself around Christian's story.
Well, I'm not saying you don't have to babysit at all tonight, because I plan on needing lots and lots of attention. But I think it'll be a better night than you'd anticipated. Wait right here.
He kissed me on the cheek and disappeared into the crowd of partygoers, mostly distinguished-looking men and sort of artsy, fashionable women in their 40s and 50s, what appeared to be a mix of bankers and magazine people, with a few designers, photographers, and models thrown in for good measure. There was a small, elegant stone patio in the back of the townhouse, all lit by white candles, where a violinist played softly, and I peeked outside. Immediately I recognized Anna Wintour, looking absolutely ravishing in a cream-colored silk slip dress and beaded Manolo sandals. She was talking animatedly to a man I presumed to be her boyfriend, although her giant Chanel sunglasses prevented me from being able to tell if she was amused, indifferent, or sobbing. The press loved to compare the antics and attitudes of Anna and Miranda, but I found it impossible to believe that anyone could be quite as unbearable as my boss. Behind her stood what I presumed to be a few Vogue editors, eyeing Anna warily and wearily, like our own clackers I Miranda, and next to them was a screeching Donatella Versace. Her face was so caked with makeup, her clothes so phenomenally tight, that she actually looked like a caricature of herself. Like the first time I visited Switzerland, I couldn't help thinking how much it resembled the mock-up town in Epcot. Donatella actually looked more like the character on Saturday Night Live than herself. I sipped my glass of champagne, and I thought I wouldn't be having any, and made small talk with an Italian guy, one of the first ugly ones I'd ever met, who spoke in florid prose about his innate appreciation for the female body, until Christian reappeared again. "Hey, come with me for a minute," he said, once again navigating me smoothly through the crowd. He was wearing his uniform, perfectly faded diesels, a white T-shirt, a dark sport coat, and Gucci loafers, and he blended into the fashion crowd seamlessly. "Where are we going?" I asked, keeping my eyes peeled for Miranda, who, no matter what Christian said, was still probably expecting me to be banished to the corner, faxing or updating the itinerary.
"First, we're getting you another drink, and maybe another for me as well. Then, I'm gonna teach you how to dance."
"And what makes you think I don't know how to dance? It just so happens that I'm a gifted dancer."
He handed me another glass of champagne that seemed to appear out of thin air and led me into his parents' formal living room, which was done in gorgeous shades of deep maroon. A six-piece band was playing hip music, of course, and the couple dozen people under 35 had congregated here. As if on cue, the band started playing Marvin Gaye's "Let's Get It On," and Christian pulled me against him. He smelled of masculine preppy cologne, something old school like polo sport. His hips moved naturally to the music, no thinking involved. We just moved together all over that makeshift dance floor, and he sang quietly in my ear. The rest of the room became fuzzy. I was vaguely aware that there were others dancing too, and somewhere someone was making a toast to something. But at that moment, the only thing with any definition was Christian. Somewhere in the deep recesses of my mind, there was a tiny but insistent reminder that this body against mine was not Alex's, but it didn't matter at all. Not now. Not tonight. It was after 1 when I actually remembered that I was there with Miranda. It had been hours since I'd last seen her, and I was certain she'd forgotten all about me and headed back to the hotel. But when I finally pulled myself away from the couch in his father's study, I saw her happily chatting with Karl Lagerfeld and Gwyneth Paltrow, all of them apparently oblivious to the fact that they would be all waking up for the Christian Dior show in just a few hours. I was debating whether or not I should approach her when she spotted me.
"Andrea, come over here,"
she called, her voice sounding almost merry over the din of the party that had become noticeably more festive in the last few hours. Someone had dimmed the lights, and it was abundantly clear that the partiers who remained had been well taken care of by the smiling bartenders. The annoying way she pronounced my name didn't even bother me in my warm and fuzzy champagne buzz. And even though I thought the evening couldn't get any better, she was clearly calling me over to introduce me to her celebrity friends.
"Yes, Miranda,"
I cooed in my most ingratiating "thank you for bringing me to this fabulous place" tone. She didn't even look in my general direction. "Get me a Pellegrino and then make sure the driver's out front. I'm ready to leave now." The two women and one man standing next to her snickered, and I felt my face turn bright red.
"Of course, I'll be right back."
I fetched the water, which she accepted without a thank you, and made my way through the thinning crowd to the car. I considered finding Christian's parents to thank them, but thought better of it and headed straight toward the door, where he was leaning up against the frame with a smugly satisfied expression.
"So, little Andy, did I show you a good time tonight?"
He slurred just a little bit, and it seemed nothing short of adorable at that moment.
"It was all right, I suppose." "Just all right? Sounds to me like you wish I would have taken you upstairs tonight, huh, Andy? All in good time, my friend, all in good time."
I smacked him playfully on the forearm. "Don't flatter yourself, Christian. Thank your parents for me." And for once, I leaned over first and kissed him on the cheek before he could do anything else. "Good night."
"A tease,"
he called, slurring just a little bit more.
"You're quite the little tease. Bet your boyfriend loves that about you, doesn't he?"
He was smiling now, and not cruelly. It was all part of the flirty game for him, but the reference to Alex sobered me for a minute. Just long enough to realize that I'd had a better time tonight than I could remember having had in many years. The drinking and the close dancing and his hands on my back as he pulled me against him made me feel more alive than in all the months since I'd been working at Runway, months that had been filled with nothing but frustration and humiliation and a body-numbing exhaustion. Maybe this was why Lily did it, I thought. The guys, the partying, the sheer joy of realizing you're young and breathing. I couldn't wait to call and tell her all about it. Miranda joined me in the back seat of the limo after another 5 minutes, and she even appeared to be somewhat happy. I wondered if she'd gotten drunk, but ruled that out immediately. The most I'd ever seen her drink was a sip of this or that, and then only because a social situation demanded it. She preferred Perrier or Pellegrino to champagne and certainly a milkshake or a latte to a Cosmo, so the chances she was actually drunk right now were slim. After grilling me about the following day's itinerary for the first 5 minutes, luckily I'd thought to tuck a copy in my bag, she turned and looked at me for the first time all evening.
"Emily, Andrea, how long have you been working for me?"
It came out of left field, and my mind couldn't work fast enough to figure out the ulterior motive for this sudden question. It felt strange to be the object of any question of hers that wasn't explicitly asking why I was such a fucking idiot for not finding, fetching, or faxing something fast enough. She'd never actually asked about my life before, unless she remembered the details of our hiring interview, and it seemed unlikely, considering she'd stared at me with utterly blank eyes my very first day of work. Then she had no idea where, if anywhere, I'd attended college, where, if anywhere, I lived in Manhattan, or what, if anything, I did in the city in the few precious hours a day I wasn't racing around for her. And although this question most certainly did have a Miranda element to it, my intuition said that this might, just maybe, be a conversation about me.
"Next month it'll be a year, Miranda."
"And do you feel you've learned a few things that may help you in your future?"
She peered at me, and I instantly suppressed the urge to start rattling off the myriad things I'd learned. How to find a single store or restaurant review in a whole city or out of a dozen newspapers with few to no clues about its genuine origin. How to pander to pre-teenage girls who'd already had more life experiences than both my parents combined. How to plead with, scream at, persuade, cry to, pressure, cajole, or charm anyone, from the immigrant food delivery guy to the editor-in-chief of a major publishing house, to get exactly what I needed, when I needed it. And, of course, how to complete just about any challenge in under an hour, because the phrase, "I'm not sure how," or "that's not possible," was simply not an option. It had been nothing if not a learning-rich year.
"Of course," I gushed. "I've learned more in 1 year working for you than I could have hoped to have learned in any other job. It's been fascinating, really, seeing how the major magazine runs, the production cycle, what all the different jobs are, and, of course, being able to observe the way you manage everything, all the decisions you make. It's been an amazing year. I'm so thankful, Miranda."
So thankful that two of my molars had been aching for weeks, too, but I wasn't ever able to get in to see a dentist during working hours, but whatever. My newfound, intimate knowledge of Jimmy Choo's handicraft had been well worth the pain. Could this possibly sound believable? I stole a glance, and she seemed to be buying it, nodding her head gravely.
"Well, you know, Andrea, that if after a year my girls performed well, I consider them ready for a promotion."
My heart surged. Was it finally happening? Was this where she told me that she'd already gone ahead and secured a job for me at the New Yorker? Never mind that she had no idea I would kill to work there. Maybe she had just figured it out because she cares.
"I have my doubts about you, of course. Don't think I haven't noticed your lack of enthusiasm, or those sighs or faces you make when I ask you to do something that you quite obviously don't feel like doing. I'm hoping that's just a sign of your immaturity, since you do seem reasonably competent in other areas. What exactly are you interested in doing?"
Reasonably competent. She may as well have announced I was the most intelligent, sophisticated, gorgeous, and capable young woman she'd ever had the pleasure of meeting. Miranda Priestley had just told me I was reasonably competent.
"Well, actually, it's not that I don't love fashion, because of course I do, who wouldn't?" I rushed on to say, keeping a careful appraisal of her expression, which, as usual, remained mostly unchanged. "It's just that I've always dreamt of becoming a writer, so I was hoping that might, be an area I could explore."
She folded her hands in her lap and glanced out the window. It was clear that this 45-second conversation was already beginning to bore her, so I had to move quickly.
"Well, I certainly have no idea if you can write a word or not, but I'm not opposed to having you write a few short pieces for the magazine to find out. Perhaps a theater review or a small write-up for the happening section. As long as it doesn't interfere with any of your responsibilities for me, and is done only during your own time, of course."
Of course, that would be wonderful.
We were talking, really communicating, and we hadn't so much as mentioned the words breakfast or dry cleaning yet. Things were going too well not to just go for it, and so I said, "It's my dream to work at the New Yorker one day." This seemed to catch her now drifting attention, and once again she peered at me. "Why ever would you want to do that? No glamour there, just nuts and bolts." I couldn't decide if the question was rhetorical, so I played it safe and kept my mouth shut. My time was about 20 seconds from expiring, both because we were nearing the hotel and her fleeting interest in me was fading fast. She was scrolling through the incoming calls on her cell phone, but still managed to say in the most offhanded, casual way,
"The New Yorker, Condé Nast."
I was nodding wildly, encouragingly, but she wasn't looking at me.
"Of course I know a great many people there. We'll see how the rest of the trip goes, and perhaps I'll make a call over there when we return."
The car pulled up to the entrance, and an exhausted-looking Monsieur Renault eclipsed the bellman, who was leaning forward to open Miranda's door, and opened it himself.
"Ladies, I hope you had a lovely evening," he crooned, doing his best to smile through the exhaustion.
"We'll be needing the car at 9 tomorrow morning to go to the Christian Dior show. I have a breakfast meeting in the lobby at 8:30. See that I'm not disturbed before then," she barked,
all traces of her previous humanness evaporating like spilled water on a hot sidewalk. And before I could think how to end our conversation, or, at the very least, kiss up a little more for having had it at all, she walked toward the elevators and vanished inside one. I shot a weary, understanding look to Monsieur Renault and boarded an elevator myself. The small, tastefully arranged chocolates on a silver tray on my bedside table only highlighted the perfection of the evening. In one random, unexpected night, I'd felt like a model, hung out with one of the hottest guys I'd seen in the flesh, and had been told by Miranda Priestley that I was reasonably competent. I felt like everything was finally coming together, that the past year of sacrifice was showing the first early signs of potentially paying off. I collapsed on top of the covers, still fully dressed, and gazed at the ceiling, still unable to believe that I'd told Miranda straight up that I wanted to work at the New Yorker, and she hadn't laughed, or screamed, or in any way, shape, or form freaked out. She hadn't even scoffed and told me that I was ridiculous for not wanting to get promoted somewhere within Runway. It was almost as though, and I might be projecting here, but I don't think so, she had listened to me and understood. Understood and agreed. It was almost too much to comprehend. I undressed slowly, making sure to savor every minute of tonight, going over and over in my mind the way Christian had led me from room to room, then all over the dance floor, the way he looked at me through those hooded lids with the persistent curl, the way Miranda had almost imperceptibly nodded when I'd said what I really wanted was to write. A truly glorious night, I had to say, one of the best in recent history. It was already 3:30 in the morning Paris time, making it 9:30 New York time, a perfect time to catch Lily before she went out for the night, although I should have just dialed with no regard for the insistent blinking light that announced, surprise, surprise, that I had messages. I cheerfully pulled out a pad of the Ritz stationery and got ready to transcribe. There were bound to be long lists of irritating requests from irritating people, but nothing could take away my Cinderella-esque evening. The first three were from Monsieur Renault and his assistants, confirming various drivers and appointments for the next day, always remembering to wish me a good night, as though I were actually a person instead of just a slave, which I appreciated. Between the third and the fourth message, I found myself both wishing and not wishing that one of the messages to come was from Alex, and as a result, was both delighted and anxious when the fourth was from him.
Hi, Andy, it's me, Alex. Listen, I'm sorry to bother you over there. I'm sure you're incredibly busy, but I need to talk to you. So please call me on my cell phone as soon as you get this. Doesn't matter how late it is, just be sure to call, okay? Okay, bye.
It was so strange that he hadn't said he loved me or missed me or was waiting for me to get back, but I guess all of those things fall squarely into the inappropriate category when people decide to take a break. I hit delete and decided, rather arbitrarily, that the lack of urgency in his voice meant I could wait until tomorrow. I just couldn't handle a long state-of-our-relationship conversation at 3 o'clock in the morning after as wonderful a night as I'd just had. The last and final message was from my mom, and it, too, sounded strange and ambiguous.
Hi, honey, it's Mom. It's about 8 our time. Not sure what that makes it for you. Listen, no emergency. Everything's fine. But it'd be great if you could call me back when you hear this. We'll be up for a while, so any time is fine, but tonight is definitely better than tomorrow. We both hope you're having a wonderful time, and we'll talk to you later. Love you.
This was definitely strange. Both Alex and my mother had called me in Paris before I'd gotten a chance to call either of them, and both had requested that I call them back regardless of what time I got the message. Considering my parents defined a late night by whether or not they managed to stay awake for Letterman's opening monologue, I knew something had to be up.
But at the same time, no one sounded particularly panicked or even a little frantic. Perhaps I'd take a long bubble bath with some of the Ritz products provided and slowly work up the energy to call everyone back. The night had just been too good to wreck by talking to my mother about some